Hi, this is Randy, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains, where real scientists answer your beauty questions, for Tuesday, November 25th, 2014. Hello, everybody. I'm Randy Schuler, and happy pre-Thanksgiving to our U.S. listeners. Welcome to our special Black Tuesday program. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Perry Romanowski.
Hey, Randy, how's it going?
It's going great. Hey, we mentioned Thanksgiving, and actually last week you talked a little bit about some Thanksgiving beauty science we had written about before. But I wanted to mention one other sort of Thanksgiving-related thing, which is the November issue of Oprah's O magazine.
Oh.
Yeah, and the reason I want to bring that up is very self-serving because I was quoted in this month's issue.
Wow, that's excellent.
Yeah, so for our listeners, if you pick that issue up, it's on page 124. It's an article about fragrance, and it's funny, and Perry, you obviously know how this goes, but you know, you'll get a call from one of the beauty magazines with some questions, and if you do a diligent job, I mean, it took me maybe, an hour or so to do some research into, this was about perfume oils. You know, I had to look up some things, check some facts, you know, write up a response, send that in to them. So it was, you know, maybe in total an hour or two worth of work and several emails going back and forth. You know, they'll ask some clarifying questions. I'll dig in with a little more information. So the result of that is about six words in the magazine. It never ceases to amaze me how they managed to distill down all that information into virtually nothing. But yeah, I mean that's just the nature of the game. But it does sort of amuse me.
Yeah, and you know there are times when you get much longer things, but with the really big media outlets like O or the New York Times, it's a really pretty short on the quotes.
But it's always, I always get a kick out of seeing my name in print. So it's all, Indeed. It's all worth it. Hey, I thought for our first segment today, we'd do something a little different.
All right, wait, we're not going to play a game where I can't win and and Chance beats me?
I get the feeling you and Chance gang up against me. I don't know, I'm not quite sure why, but anyway. No, but this is actually a little segment that harkens to back to something that you wrote, I don't know, was it 6 months ago, a year ago maybe, but let me set this up. So longtime listeners of the show, you know, may have already figured out that we're, you know, kind of comic book fans. And, you know, right now, you know, as we're recording this, it's a new golden age of comic book movies and TV shows, you know?
I mean movies everywhere.
Right, I mean, it was just this year that we had, you know, Spider-Man movie and Captain America, and there have been the Iron Man and Avenger movies, and of course, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy. They're filming the new Superman versus Batman movie. Then you've got the fall TV shows that, you know, just started a month or so ago, like, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Flash and Gotham.
I tell you what, I've been watching The Flash. I love that show. It's awesome.
So, you know,
I know you're more of a Marvel comic guy, but you know, The Flash is a good character.
Well, like I said, it's a golden age for all comic book fans. Now, you know, why the heck am I bringing this up on a beauty science podcast? Well, there actually is a connection between comic books and beauty science, and you managed to find this common thread in a post you wrote about cosmetic chemists as supervillains. And I thought maybe you could recap that for our listeners.
Yeah, this is an article I had written. Someone had mentioned that they saw, they were watching an old TV show where one of the character was an evil cosmetic chemist. And this made me think of, like, just, you know, fictional cosmetic chemists anywhere. And one of the best places to find fictionalized scientists is in the comics. It turns out in the comic books, you know, there are a lot of evil scientists or just scientists, right? They don't have to necessarily be evil.
So, sometimes the scientists become the superhero too, right?
Right, exactly. But often the scientist is the evil one. And so I put together this list of just all the fictionalized, you know, sort of cosmetic chemists that there may be out there. And now the number one that I found was the Joker. You know, he's the villain in the Batman series. And he's probably the most evil cosmetic chemist ever, right? Because he specialized in making color cosmetics that contort the face of the user, of the wearer, and that makes him this big grin, right? I remember that from, it was that that Keaton at...
Yeah, the first Batman movie. He's the Joker's poison makes you die with a big, you know, Jokery grin on your face. So, yeah.
Right, but the poison was delivered to people through their cosmetics.
Yeah.
Right. And in Batman, you know, it's kind of strange that the Batman comic features a couple of evil cosmetic chemists because there's another chemist, there's another character called Poison Ivy. Mm-hmm. Now, she's more of an eco-terrorist, but her main weapon of choice is a pheromone-containing fragrance that controls people's mind. And, you know, to be able to do that, that's the kind of thing a cosmetic chemist would do, right?
And is she the one with the poison lipstick?
I think in one of the incarnations, she did have the poison lipstick.
So there you go. There's another cosmetic.
You remember, this isn't really the comics, but... Dr. Bunsen Honeydew?
From The Muppets.
Right, the famous scientist inventor from The Muppets. He's known to have created a hair growth tonic. So, you know, lots of cosmetic chemists working on that, right?
He's not really a super villain, but...
Not exactly. Now, you and I have some debate about this, right? About whether you could consider Peter Parker, you know, is he a scientist or...
No. The debate is not whether he's a scientist. Clearly, he's a scientist. I think you were trying to position him as a cosmetic chemist just to further your own blog post.
Well, I'm just saying, he's a polymer chemist, right? And he was bright enough to come up with that powerful webbing. I'm sure in the... bajillion issues of Spider-Man, which I'm sure you own all of them, right? So, turns out Randy is a huge Spider-Man fan of all the comic Spider-Man. But anyway, there must be some time in there he used his brain to come up with some potion that, you know, was smeared on and could be thought of as a cosmetic, right?
It's a bit of a stretch, but as always, we can agree to disagree.
You know, actually, we talked about The Flash and... Barry Allen, who is the Flash, he was a chemist. You know, he wasn't exactly following proper safety precautions when he got thrown into his chemicals and zapped by lightning to become the Flash. But you know, maybe he was making cosmetics. I haven't seen any issues with it.
See, again, I think, and here was my problem with this initially. It felt to me like you were really stretching on some of these to make the connection between the comic book character, whether it be a supervillain or not, and cosmetic chemistry, but I found a recent example in one of these TV shows we just talked about where they directly connect cosmetic chemistry and the supervillain. So I have a clip from the show. I thought I would play that for you. Okay, this is the show Gotham, which is about, it's sort of a Batman Year One story, right? It's about Bruce Wayne growing up and what's going on in the police force in Gotham City. And, you know, every week there's another criminal they're dealing with. And so here's a clip of the detectives talking to somebody about a scientist in a certain company. So let me play that clip for you.
He worked for us for several years as a biochemist. Primarily personal care products, shampoos, toothpaste. Dan was frustrated that he wasn't doing more important work. He grew disgruntled and unstable. We tried to get him help, but he resisted.
So I like that he's developing shampoos and toothpaste until he became unstable and disgruntled. Doesn't that describe just about everybody we work with?
Many of them, yes.
So that's the first little clip. And then the detectives go to try and track this guy down. So they find another professor that he had worked with who gives them a little bit more background. So there's one more clip, a quick quote here I'll play.
Research for Wellzyme led him into some dark moral corners.
Wellzyme said he made shampoo. Where are the dark moral corners in that?
That has to be one of my favorite quotes ever. He made shampoo. Where's the dark moral corners in that?
That is rich.
So it turns out that this guy invented this this viper serum that was giving people superpowers. The bad news is it was also killing them. So they would go on these these villainous rampages and then just collapse from his... his serum, but the guy was clearly, no questions asked, this guy was a cosmetic chemist.
Ah, well, there you go. It's good to see we cosmetic chemists getting our due in the popular culture.
All right, well, we should move on because we have a big show today to discuss all the latest beauty science news.
Ah, yes, beauty science.
I'll kick things off. Here's the first story I want to talk about. And I want to talk about that again. This one highlights the difference between you and me.
All right.
Because, you know, I have no trouble blowing my own horn. And, you know, for example, I just mentioned I was quoted in Oprah's magazine. But,
sure.
But you're too humble to mention when you get quoted. Because I saw that you were just featured in an article from the Canadian Broadcasting Channel's news website. That was titled Remedy or Ripoff, and it listed some things to look out, you know, if you want to be a skeptical consumer. So since you won't bring it up, I thought I'd mention a couple of things from that article. So
That's right. Well, just on the genesis of that is, like, I think it was last year, the CBC, I went out to Toronto and I recorded a segment for them called CBC's Marketplace, which essentially they look at consumer products and try to look at, you know, whether you're spending too much money on them or not. And so they had me as their expert for their cosmetic one. So they were doing a refresh of that, and that's how they reconnected with me like a year later to talk about this remedy or ripoff story.
Well, they go through a number of things. I think you were quoted in three out of the five ones they mentioned, so I'll just give a couple of these quickly. But the first one was clinically proven. And, you know, you said that while this can sound like a scientific stamp of approval, you know, it's kind of questionable. And they credit you as Perry Romanowski, a cosmetic chemist based in Chicago. Cosmetic chemist, but not super villain, as far as I know.
Right.
And you told them that, you know, on one hand, you know, it does mean that some sort of testing was done to be able to say clinically proven. But that term doesn't really have any industry standard. And there's a, you know, a wide range of things that it can actually mean. And you added that, you know, any testing that was done may not cover, you know, all of the product's claims. So, you know, clinically proven doesn't really mean that much if you see that show up on a label. So I thought that was
right.
Was an excellent point.
Incidentally, one of the things that I'm impressed with is they generally got what I said correct. A lot of times when you're doing interviews with reporters, you'll talk to them and you have a conversation and then you'll see the final piece and you're like, wait, I didn't say that. So, but they got it right here. But yeah, indeed, there's very few cosmetic companies, at least in the United States, that blatantly lie on their label. So, you know, I'm sure there are some, but certainly the big guys don't. And when they say clinically proven, they definitely have done some testing.
Oh yeah, for sure. The second area that you were quoted on here is about natural, and, you know, we've talked about that ad nauseum on this show and on the blog, on the website. And you said that's a very appealing catch-all term, but in fact it means very little, because almost anything could be considered to have a natural origin, you know, depending on how you look at it. And, you know, even naturally derived ingredients can still be very highly processed.
Right.
And you said here, and I'll quote you, the reality is that any company can call their product natural, and there's a fair amount of greenwashing that goes on in the cosmetic industry. You can take a regular product, sprinkle in some extract, put it in a green package with a grassy scent, and call it natural.
Which is what we did when we launched the VO5 herbals back in the early 90s.
Shame on us.
Well, no, I think there is some legitimacy to greenwashing because people want products that work, but they want to feel like they're doing something natural.
Yeah, I suppose we could argue the ethics of it, but
but
anyway. And then the last one you were quoted on was about trendy scientific buzzwords, and you said that including a graph or a picture of a molecule in advertising or packaging can make consumers believe a product really works. In fact, we talked about this, I think, maybe 2 weeks on the show, that there was a study that actually proved this.
Right. I think that was top of my mind when I was talking to this reporter. So
You said that, you know, marketers have known this for years, and, you know, if you make up something that sounds sciencey and techy, it'll help people believe that the product really works, even if you're making up those scientific terms.
Yeah.
So well done. So, and congratulations to you and your affiliation with the Canadian Broadcasting.
Well, thank you. And if anyone else out there wants to speak with either Randy or I, we're happy to, answer your beauty questions for you.
Oh, there you go.
Or even go on TV. Well, at least I don't mind going on TV. So, how's this for a clean break from the last segment? And this study conducted by the Bradley Corporation, makers of hand washing products, of course, they found, shockingly, that Americans don't wash their hands long enough and they don't always use soap.
Hmm.
According to their survey, a full 55% of Americans were not washing their hands. Do you know what the recommended length of time for washing your hands is?
It's like 45 minutes, I think.
No, just 20 seconds.
Oh,
20
okay.
seconds.
Yeah.
So this is how long the CDC says it takes to remove germs from your hands. And so 70% of Americans also say they just rinse their hands without any soap. So, and I should say that this is referring specifically to after you're leaving the bathroom.
Oh, my. Right? Oh, my.
Now, they also found that 81% of Americans admit to occasionally not washing their hands after they leave the bathroom. And I think I saw, and this is just the people that admit it. I think the number would be higher, to tell you the truth. I mean, you know, I can have some sympathy for people, right? Let me ask you this. So after you've gone to the bathroom, there's a big line in front of the sink. Say you're at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
Not that this ever happened to me, but then they had hand sanitizers right outside the bathroom door, as they do at airports.
Mm-hmm.
If you just use the hand sanitizer, does that count?
Well, it's kind of a moot point for me because I always wear gloves when I go out in public. So
Right. Or you don't even go, right?
Yeah, so I'm not quite sure I understand the question, but okay, yeah, you could use the hand sanitizer, sure. I mean, it's not going to be as effective.
Right, right. And it won't get rid of the dirty bits, right?
Yeah, there's no rinsing involved, so.
Exactly. So there you go. Well, there you go. If you shake hands with somebody and there's an 80% chance that they didn't wash their hand.
That makes me feel a bit skeezy now.
Yeah.
So
speaking of skeezy, how about this next story that you have?
Well, now, you know, I know where you're going with this. Just because this came from Refinery 29 doesn't mean it's automatically skeezy. Now, yeah, I mean, reading that website, and we've talked about this on the show before, you know, reading that website is one of my guilty pleasures. It's funny, they put out so much information, but their content is all over the place. So true story. They recently posted one story about Obama's deal with China on carbon emissions.
Okay.
And then the next second, they posted a story featuring a picture of Kim Kardashian's naked ass. Like,
yeah, I heard she was trying to break the internet with that. But apparently she didn't break the internet because she didn't even outperform that comet, that Rosetta thing that landed on the comet.
Well, and there was even some mashup with Rosetta, you know, the comet on her. I don't know, whatever. Anyway, but my point is, Refinery 29 puts out a lot of stuff, and this particular story that caught my eye was about pubic hair transplants.
Oh,
yeah. So the article referred to this as bush grafting, which actually sounds like some sort of congressional investigation into Republican ethics. But apparently in Korea, women are getting hair transplanted from their heads onto their lady parts. Now, it's cultural because for them, pubic hair is a sign of sexual health and fertility. And it's interesting what's driving this. It's not pressure from husbands or, you know, creepy boyfriends. According to the study, they said that 74% of the women who have had this done are doing it because of a sense of inferiority to the same sex.
Huh.
So it's kind of peer pressure, right?
I guess, which
reminds me, dude, you really need a trim. Just as I mentioned that. So And there's another reason that they're doing this. I guess there's a condition, a medical condition that causes you to lose your pubic hair. It's called pubic atrichiasis. And they've estimated that 10% of Korean women have this, and that causes a lot of psychological stress. So getting a bush grafting, I guess, is a way to overcome that. So if you're interested, or anybody in our audience out there is interested, the procedure to have this done starts around $2,000. You can have this done from the International Society of Hair Restoration Surgery. And according to their statistics, in the last 2 years, the demand for this procedure has just about doubled. So,
well, I suppose it's good to see that there's a culture out there that's embracing hair, you know? We're so obsessed with getting rid of our hair.
So you've got a choice, right? You can go hairless and get a Brazilian, or you can go hair enhanced and get a Korean.
Wow. So that mostly comes apart because people are in a group and they're looking and seeing what everyone else
apparently
is the way they look.
Yeah,
huh?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that reminds me of this story about a group of people and cheerleaders. Did you ever hear of the cheerleader effect?
I have. I'm not exactly sure I understand it, but I have heard of it.
Right, but for people who don't know, this is the effect in which people are deemed more attractive when looked at in a group.
Hmm.
And so the idea is that sort of the asymmetries and disproportionalities of the individuals kind of gets averaged out when somebody looks at the group, and that makes anyone in the group look more attractive than any individual.
Yeah, this could explain the low ratings I got when I posted my picture to Hot or Not.
Well, this was another experiment with photographs. You know, a lot of these attractiveness ones are done with photographs, and. Really, I wonder, is this the only kind of research that they do, these attractiveness researches?
It's the easiest research that they do.
Well, you know, it's so much the pictures, sometimes you don't really look like your pictures. I don't know. But anyway, let's just say that this research is really solid. So anyway, in five different experiments in which people rated the attractiveness of people in photos, the ones in which the person was alone in the photograph resulted in a lower attractiveness rating than the ones in which there were other people in the photo.
Hmm.
I remember reading in the book Predictably Irrational that you could make yourself look better by surrounding yourself by people who looked less attractive.
Well, but that totally makes sense.
Yeah, and so this seems to confirm that. So there's your next beauty tip from the Beauty Brains. If you want to look more attractive, get less attractive friends.
Wow, I can imagine how that conversation's going to go. Which reminds me, Perry, you want to go hang out Friday night?
Yeah, you must have seen my hair today. I woke up and it is all over the place, right? And I forgot to have a hat, but, you know, I'm sort of enjoying the hair all over the place. I'm sort of like one of those mad scientist sorts.
Wow. Well, I've got another, I guess it's a hair-related story. You know, we spend a lot of time debunking scare stories, right? About, you know, stories that say how dangerous beauty products are, and you know, it's not typically the case, but it is important to remember that some cosmetics really can be dangerous. So case in point, I found this article on a New Orleans television station website, actually, but they were talking about the danger of fake eyelashes, or more specifically, fake eyelash adhesive. So,
I can see
Here's the deal. According to this report, a number of women have had reactions to these application of these fake eyelashes that make their eyes, you know, and especially the eyelids, all swollen and red. Now, the reporter said that the problem lies that's in the process used by the lash specialists at the malls and salons. And one woman in particular, after this happened to her, she went back to the mall and to the salon and said, you know, show me, what did you use on me when you did this? And she looked at the adhesive they used on her, and she found that it was a bottle of hair glue, you know, like you would use for, you know, bonding weaves or extensions. Now, the ingredients in those products, you know, those are latex-based, typically, and, you know, a lot of people have latex allergies. And that's a high pH solution, you know, the adhesive bonds as the, actually it's ammonium hydroxide, as that evaporates off, the pH drops and the adhesive gets, you know, stickier. Well, you know,
right,
you can't put something high pH around your eyes. Of course, that's going to cause a problem. And, you know, that bottle actually says, you know, you know, avoid contact with eyes. So that's just, it's not so much a problem with the chemistry of the product, but it's being misused. So if you are having this done in a salon, this is a legitimate concern. You should, you know, make sure you go to someplace you trust. You should know what they're putting on your eyes and, you know, make sure it's not hair adhesive.
Wow. Yeah, that is a little bit scary.
You know, and then, so it was a good article, but then oddly enough, it abruptly shifted gears and it began to talk about other dangerous ingredients in beauty products, like you guessed it. Yeah. Lead in lipstick. I think that's, you know, it's a good time to plug our latest book. It's okay to put hair adhesive directly in your eyes and
It's okay to have lead in your lipstick.
I'm sorry, I get that confused.
That's the name of the book.
Right. Yeah, there. Thank you. So anyway, so be careful out there.
This article I saw, which gives you tips on how to make yourself more attractive to the opposite sex.
Really?
You know. As a beauty blogger, whenever I see articles about attractiveness and science, my interest is piqued because the title was 12 scientifically, or at least supposedly scientifically proven ways to make yourself more attractive to the opposite sex.
Okay.
You know, I say supposedly because, you know, this kind of research I think is inherently sketchy since concepts like attractiveness and beauty are really hard to quantify.
Sure.
But, you know, researchers are out there doing it. So let's see what they have to say. Here are the 12 tips. So number one is keep your teeth nice and white.
Okay.
So this study by researchers at the University of Leeds, they involved showing pictures of people and then having them rate attractiveness. Then they digitally enhanced the photos by changing the teeth color and the spacing.
And and the spacing? So you need orthodontia as well.
Right, so you should have nice white straight teeth is what they came up with. Now here's the one thing that they claim that the white teeth are the equivalent of the peacock's tail signaling attractiveness and health, and I'm skeptical of their reasoning because since this wouldn't have really been the case like when we were evolving on the African savannas, right? You know, I think it's just the sensibilities of a modern population, don't you think? I wonder if they did this study like on the tribes of people living in the jungles of the Amazon, would they still pick the people with the white teeth? All right, so get your teeth white. Number two, eat fruits and vegetables for a glowing skin.
Mm.
So in this study, scientists looked at the skin condition of people over the course of 6 weeks. So they also had them to complete a food frequency questionnaire indicating how many servings of fruits and vegetables they ate. And once I read that, I said,
self-reported data, right?
Right. The average that they said that people ate fruits and vegetables, the average was 3.5 servings a day.
Wow.
What college person is eating 3.5 servings a day?
Well, I forget. Is a Big Mac vegetable or fruit?
I think it's a mix, right? So anyway, over the 6 weeks, they found that people who reported more consumption had healthier looking skin. And from that, they jumped to the idea that the carotenoids in the fruits and vegetables must be the thing that's happening, that's making that happen. Needless to say, I have little faith in this, but yeah, that's what they said. All right, number three. Here's an interesting one. For women, should smile more. Number three, that's a third scientifically proven attractiveness tip. So in this study, they had over 1,000 people rate pictures, of course, attractiveness of individuals. And what they found is that when women who smiled were rated the most attractive. And so I guess if you're a woman and you want to be more attractive, you know, smile and have straight white teeth.
So much for my theory that scowling chicks are hot.
Well, scowling chicks may not be hot, but if you're a guy, the opposite is true, actually. To be more attractive as a guy, you don't want to smile. In fact, men were found to be more attractive if they were judged as brooding or swaggering. In fact, of all the expressions that people rated on, smiling men were rated the least attractive.
Can you swagger in a still photograph? I don't even know how to do that.
Yeah, I don't really know, but I guess I'm going to have to start pouting more. All right, here's another one. Men should shave their beards. The study found with beards, men with beards were seen as more aggressive, but not better looking. So, though, I once read that women find facial hair attractive at different points in their cycles, right? So, for example, when they're ovulating, they like more facial hair, but like less at other times during their cycle. And it just made me wonder, did these researchers control for this?
Oh, that's great question. So just let me make sure I got this. So beard hair bad, transplanted pubic hair good.
Apparently.
Okay, got
yes,
it.
Apparently. And I think it's, culturally dependent too. Incidentally, I experimented with the beard hair thing, but it doesn't seem to have much effect on how appealing my wife finds. So I don't really know that.
When are we getting her on the show? I really am looking forward to that episode.
Actually, she's just this off camera character, right? I guess it's an off mic character.
Right, sure.
All right, we just have a few more. Number 7: women should wear red lipstick. We covered this on a previous show, I think. Well. But interestingly, what they found was that when women were wearing red lipstick, men looked at the woman's lips for more than seven seconds when it was a red color. And then without lipsticks, they only looked at the lips for like 2 seconds. So if you want men to look at you.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. Number 8, men should play hard to get. It turns out women like men much better when they aren't sure how he feels about her. So
this is great advice.
So you should really be aloof as a guy if you want to look more attractive. So be a brooding, aloof jerk who has no facial hair. Okay, here's another just completely stupid one, but they put this. It reaches the top 12 scientifically proven strategies. Wear a t-shirt with a big letter T printed on it. So women found that men wearing these types of t-shirts, when I say t-shirts, I mean the letter T.
Come on.
They were 12% more attractive. I wonder what the statistical variation on that was. This is just ridiculous to me, But, all things being equal, when you're wearing your Spider-Man shirt, it should be Spider-Man in the shape of a T. It makes you look more manly,
I guess. Makes no sense, but okay.
Let's do another one for women here. Women should have higher pitched voices. So it turns out men are more attractive to women with higher pitched voices. Apparently, it connotes a smaller body type. But, of course, this would really depend on, the individual, right? Because there's men who like smaller body types and men who like bigger body types.
Sure, something for everybody.
I don't know. And, if this study was done 100 years ago, what would the results be, right?
Culturally dependent.
Yeah. Anyway, this is just another reason that people shouldn't smoke, right? Because when you smoke, you get that lower voice.
But maybe for men, a lower voice is better. I don't know.
Yeah, it didn't say men should use higher pitched voices. Although, I've been practicing this voice whenever I need it.
Oh,
this is a character I do.
Seriously, stop talking like that.
that's my bar character. It's somehow.
How's that working out for you?
Oh, that's good. Well, I think I might have picked the wrong name for that character.
What is that, Champ?
Reinhold was my name. Well, there you have it. 10 of the 12 things you could do to make yourself look more attractive. The other two are that, just real quick, that men should be more relaxed. So okay. If you look like you don't care about anything, women find you more attractive. Yeah. And if you're going on a date, you should go on a roller coaster because once you get that adrenaline pumping through your veins, everybody looks more attractive.
Okay, great. Well, good advice. I can't wait to put those into practice. Wow. All right. We got a couple more maybe we can get to really quickly here. This is a short one. You know, oh, well, by the way, you know, it's interesting that I keep coming up with sort of, you know, science hair related stories, and you keep finding stories about how to make yourself more attractive to the opposite sex. Are you sure you're not on Tinder?
I am not on Tinder. Maybe we should get Sarah on Tinder, right?
There you go. That's perfect. All right. So anyway, my last story anyway, you know, I just talked about eyelash products being dangerous. Well, here's a even more dangerous hair-related product. Hair weaves.
Really?
So what, I don't know what the opposite of beauty science is, maybe beauty stupidity, but in Raleigh, North Carolina, a 32-year-old woman was arrested, and she managed to sneak a gun into the sheriff's office because it was hidden in her hair weave. So, she had a little Derringer pistol hidden in her hair weave. So, that's just that's bizarre.
It's amazing.
But it did.
You stick stuff
it
in there.
It did, you know, make me think about other weaponized beauty and grooming practices. Like, you know, if you were a guy, you could probably had a razor blade in your beard. Or, you know, maybe you could have like a stiletto knife and a lipstick tube or mace and a can of hairspray. So, there's a whole sort of, you know, aggressive cosmetic campaign there.
Yeah, a handcuff key in your ear, hidden by your ear hair, right?
Well, first of all, if you have that much ear hair, that's disturbing. And secondly, that's not a weapon.
Hey, man, it's genetic. Oh, sorry.
All right.
That's finally, I got one more story.
All right.
Here's a story about the science of future beauty products. And you know, this is the future of beauty products, and here are some of the things that the Daily Collegian thought were going to change the face of the cosmetic industry.
Okay.
So there's just five of them. There's a compound called SR9009, which was found to boost metabolism, increase endurance, and enhance muscle tone through just an injection. And so the idea here is you can make yourself look better just by taking injections of this SR9009 and without having to go to the gym and working out.
Great. Okay, so do steroids. Okay, good advice number one.
Number two, you'll be able to get rid of that double chin with a new injectable called ATX-101. And in fact, they're just waiting for FDA approval. Apparently, you shoot this into yourself and it breaks down dietary fat beneath the skin.
Well, that's cool.
Then she said number three was that 3D makeup printer
that we talked about on the previous show.
We'll see where that goes. Then there are the eyelashes and press-on nails that don't have that toxic glue. And they're used to control drones and other electronic devices.
Now, I saw that article, and that was the one that perplexed me the most. It said that models wore fake eyelashes that could control drones by blinking.
That's right.
And then the press-on nails that act as a miniature theremin for playing an air piano or DJing a tub of water. What does that mean?
It's all about the wearable computers are going to be integrated into the beauty products of the future.
No, explain DJing a tub of water to me.
Oh man, don't you go out to the club?
Obviously not.
Yeah, you have water, and you know, you move your hands over it, and you go, all the kids are doing that now. All right, finally, there's the Yves Saint Laurent, which has some NASA-developed anti-aging technology. Supposedly, it's a foundation that can soak up oil and reduce shininess four times, as well as a standard product.
Oh,
and quite frankly, it sounds a little gimmicking to me, but you know, I like that NASA is getting a little press here, so I encourage everyone to use it because, you know, more money for space exploration would be good.
Yeah, there you go. Back to the Rosetta probe.
Yeah, there you have it. The stories of the week.
All right, excellent. Well, we got through a lot of stuff today, and now we're out of time.
Indeed. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and don't forget to check out our latest book, It's Okay to Have Lead in Your Lipstick.
And Answers to Other Beauty Questions You're Dying to Know. You can get that wherever you buy ebooks, or you can buy a hard copy from our website, and we'll autograph it for you.
Right, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and we always like to get questions, and you can send in a question. Just record on your smartphone and send it to thebeautybrains@gmail.com.
Excellent. All right, well, thanks, Perry, for another great show.
Thank you, Randy. I will check you later.
All right, and everybody remember, until next week, be brainy about your beauty.
to me. Shampoo? They say that, do they?